You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Carolyn Vanderweel.
And I'm Ryan Stacey. This is the Daily Local News for Thursday, December 1st, 2016.
Dan is this formal guy who does politics and gives speeches, and Carp's this rock on tour. I want to be one of those guys that the tourists see when they drive through the county and go, well, there's a real rustic.
On this week's edition of Big Talk, Perry Township trustee Dan Carp Combs talks about his dual personas as well as the city's recent renaming of Good Friday. That's coming up later in the show.
Also coming up in the next half hour, reporter Leah Carter brings us a story of surveillance and police militarization from Standing Rock, North Dakota. But first, these local headlines.
The state of Indiana has offered $7 million in tax breaks to Carrier Corporation in a deal that is expected to keep about 1,000 manufacturing jobs in Indianapolis. The tax breaks take effect over 10 years, according to a report in the Wall Street Journal. The company announced earlier this year it planned to move those jobs to Mexico. It backed off those plans this week after negotiations with President-elect Donald Trump and Vice President-elect Mike Pence. Trump and Pence toured the Carrier plant today. Although the deal will keep 1,000 jobs in Indianapolis, 600 employees at the plant are still slated to lose their jobs. So are 700 workers at a plant in Huntington that is owned by Carrier's parent corporation. Those jobs are all reportedly moving to Mexico.
The city of Bloomington is asking for feedback on a broad range of ideas that could affect the future of downtown area. From 9 a.m. until noon on Saturday, City Hall is hosting an event where community members will discuss various action ideas generated as part of Mayor John Hamilton's Downtown Safety, Civility, and Justice Initiative. There are dozens of ideas ranging from the creation of more affordable housing to restrictions on panhandling to increased police presence and surveillance. The Community Justice and Mediation Center, CJAM, is facilitating a three-stage public engagement process. The executive director of CJAM, Liz Grenat, says that they began by bringing together stakeholders, including downtown business owners, patrons, residents, community organizations, government officials, law enforcement, and panhandlers.
We brought each of those seven stakeholder groups together and got them to describe and talk to us about their perspective of how these issues were impacting what they do, how they perceived of the problem, to begin to identify the scope and complexity of what this proliferation and perception of many people that the downtown and near downtown areas and public spaces were not feeling as safe as they used to. Each of those stakeholder groups recommended and nominated 4 to 5 individuals to come together for stage two to get a more rounded view of the problems. And then those groups together began to identify solution areas and action ideas that we as a community need to begin to tackle.
The third stage begins on Saturday, starting at 9 a.m., when members of the public will be invited to comment on the action ideas. A complete list of those action ideas is available at wfhb.org. CJAM says they have not evaluated the ideas, nor do they endorse any of them. Mayor Hamilton announced the Downtown Safety, Civility, and Justice Initiative in August, responding to what he said were complaints about panhandling and other activities downtown. He made the announcements at the same time that he said police would install security cameras in the downtown parks and begin to more aggressively enforce panhandling laws.
Preparations are underway for the 5th annual Krampus Night Festival coming up this Saturday, December 3rd. In the November 28th meeting of the Board of Public Works, Sean Starowitz, the city's Assistant Director of Economic Development for the Arts, said 4,000 participants are expected this year.
Krampus Legend and Art Workshop will be hosting their Krampus 2016 on Saturday, December 3rd, with a variety of events downtown. This is the fifth year for the event, and participation has grown considerably each year, with 4,000 participants expected this year. They are requesting the use of Showers Commons from 4 to 8 p.m. for the bazaar, which will include food trucks, games, and other activities. They are also requesting the closure of the portion of Madison Street between West 3rd and West 7th Street from 6 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. for a parade.
Krampus organizer Carol McBride said the street closures will be temporary and will reopen as soon as the parade has passed through. McBride said the event will feature fire performances with torches, fire darts, and staffs again this year.
At last night's City Council meeting, council members considered a fee schedule for the private rental of some city facilities, including City Hall. Corporate Counsel Philippa Guthrie said the administration's intent is to make the Showers building available for nonprofit and for-profit groups, hosting events for educational, entertainment, and other similar purposes.
There are a lot of groups that call and want to use it. Most of them are nonprofit. In fact, all of them, as far as I know. Occasionally, there has been a for-profit requesting to use the building. And I understand in the past, I think it was just kind of a blanket no.
Guthrie said market rates were considered when setting the fee schedule, but the city was not looking to make a profit off of the events, only to reimburse itself for expenses. According to the City of Bloomington's website, rates range from $10 to $100 an hour, depending on the size of the room and whether a kitchen is needed. Reservations will be handled through a Public Works customer service representative. Guthrie emphasized the council was only being asked to approve the fee schedule, as the facility use policy is set by the administration's own authority. Still, several council members had concerns about the policy and practice. Councilmember Isabel Piedmont-Smith questioned a clause allowing the city and its departments priority over rooms previously reserved by community groups.
I have some qualms about that. Community groups put a lot of effort into their events and publicizing the events, and then just because a city body needs an emergency meeting, it doesn't seem fair to kick out a community group at the last minute.
Guthrie said ultimately conducting the city's business will take priority, and groups are given notice of that priority in advance. But Guthrie also assured the council that the city would make every effort to find an alternate meeting space for a community group should they be displaced at the last minute.
In most cases, it's not going to end up in a cancellation, I don't think, because I think we will do everything we can to work it out. But the city does have to take priority in the end.
Councilmember Allison Chopra asked Guthrie if the city could decline a reservation request based on a group's philosophy or mission.
Chopra.
Sure. We talked a bit about this during the work session, but I wanted to expand on it and really understand how the city would legally be able to or wouldn't be able to say no to a group that was unpalatable to our senses as, political leaders?
Well, it's viewpoint that matters. So mm-hmm. if you disagree with their viewpoint, mm-hmm. you shouldn't be making the judgment based on that. Just because we don't like a group or agree with their opinions or their philosophy, I don't think we would say no.
So if there's a not-for-profit group that advocated for gay therapy or the KKK wanted to go ahead and rent out a space in our city hall, we would have no reason to say
no.
No,
not if they don't pose
no
a risk.
That.
Councilmember Steve Volin continued this line of discussion with Guthrie.
If we can't restrict a facility from a group that might have policies that infringe upon rights. I mean, I'd like some clarification by next week at the very least as to whether or not we can say no to a group that violates our human rights ordinance with their mission.
We can't say no to a group based on the fact that we don't agree with their philosophy or principles. It's called viewpoint discrimination.
In a straw poll, 5 council members voted in support of the fee schedule. Council members Chopra, Piedmont-Smith, and Volin passed on the vote. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Carolyn Vandewiel.
And I'm Ryan Stacey. Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service, now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
An institution in local politics, Dan Karp Combs has been Perry Township trustee since the mid-80s, providing services for the needy and even making sure that the abandoned shortstop lot on the south side remains relatively clutter-free. Uniquely among American states, Indiana depends on the township form of government. Former Governor Mitch Daniels tried to eliminate the township system, but failed. Karp Combs joins Michael Glab on this week's Big Talk to explain why township trustees are needed now more than ever.
Hi, this is Big Talk. Michael Glab here with my guest, Dan Combs, politician, school teacher, a man of a few hats, and he is the trustee of Perry Township. Thanks for coming on, Dan.
Thank you. Thank you for having me in.
You know, it always puzzles me, what the heck does a township trustee do?
We are the grassroots link of Jeffersonian democracy. He divided America into 6 mile squares, 36 square miles. Those were townships. And each township in the Northwest Territory had a trustee, the most local elected representative there was. What I do is 99% work with low-income people. We work with the sheltering groups. We work with the feeding groups. We also have a direct relief program that somebody who cannot pay for a necessity comes in, makes an application. I feel pretty good about it. I've been doing it since 1986.
It's an elected position.
It's an elected position.
How long are the terms?
4 years. But the people who come in asking for assistance are the people that a lot of us don't want to sit by in restaurants and things like that. But a lot of them are also people, substitute school teachers, people who have just been pushed out of the marketplace. Now we have our own food pantry on South Walnut for Perry Township residents, and we go through about 10 tons of food a year. I used to think when I started, we're saving people. And then I thought, well, no, we're stabilizing people. And now I think what we're doing is we stabilize their rate of descent back into crisis. And periodically people go, well, why do we need this layer of government? And I said earlier, I'm a Jeffersonian Democrat. You know, I believe that we need people more closely to the people. You know, we're all Democrats. We're all depressed about what happened at the national level in November. However, in Monroe County, we own the local level of government, and I can guarantee you, you will interact far more regularly with local government than you will with Washington, D.C.
You were a school teacher.
Yes.
And you're retired now.
Yes. I enjoyed it. I started teaching at Wabash Valley State Prison, a high-level security prison over in Sullivan. Mm-hmm. Sullivan had 2,000 offenders in it. And I spent a year there, commuted every day, and then came back to the township office at 2 in the afternoon. And it was an education. You know, I mean, we're never too old to stop learning and to stop changing.
Your nickname is Karp. Where the heck does that come from?
It comes from getting out of the Army and getting unemployment for the only time in my life and going fishing. And I fished and I fished, and my brother actually named me that. And then it's gone through several variants. And so for 30 years, I've been Karp. I wrote columns before the HT, the Herald Times, got their neighborhood columnist.
Right.
I wrote columns for 5 years, twice a week with them under Karp Combs. And I'm just used to it. You know, we all have our little, we're all someone else. You know, very few of us are just one person. And I've been really lucky in my life to do a lot of different things. And each one of those things is a different person. I can't imagine I walked into that prison for a year every day when I spent most of my teenage years and early 20s trying to stay out of that prison. If it's someone who calls me Danny, because my name is Dan, Danny I know is someone I went to grade school with. And Dan is this formal guy who does politics and gives speeches, and Karp's this rock on tour, this guy, you know, Hilljack, a rustic. I'm I want to be one of those guys that the tourists see when they drive through the county and go, well, there's a real rustic. Life is fun, you know, for most of us it should be.
Of late, there's been a little bit of controversy. Now, you've got a son named Levi, works for the city of Bloomington.
Yes.
And Levi happened upon some information regarding the city's recent change in nomenclature for a couple of holidays. We're not going to call Good Friday Good Friday anymore. We're going to call it Spring Holiday. We're not going to call Columbus Day Columbus Day. We're going to call it Fall Holiday. And there was a memo to that effect issued by Mayor Hamilton. And then all of a sudden, one of the union officials for the city employees raised a fuss about it and put up some controversial statements on a private Facebook site, which Levi, your son, had access to. What happened?
He's a member of the union, asked me, local, for the city of Bloomington, and he's talked to me about it before, that he just doesn't understand some of the people that are in it, you know, literally, Tea Party, I hate the government, I hate the government, where's my check and when do I get my raise? He said, Dad, I've got to show you these posts that the union president put up about the holidays. The comments were about, we're going to grieve this situation that they changed the names that we have in contract. And the preface for that first post from the union president was, it was probably done because of a couple Muslims working in City Hall. And then the next sentence was, they must hate Christians there. There. So we're not talking about the Muslims, we're talking about City Hall must hate Christians. And then there was an obscenity-laden sentence about, I don't care what they believe.
Right.
We're going to challenge this. And my son got very offended, and so he responded to that. And he said, you know, you could have done this without bringing Muslims into it. And it didn't have to be that way. It didn't have to come down to us versus outsiders. There's one post that just sent me over the top that this was essentially the way Muslims work. Mm-hmm. Is first they get in, they demand a few special rights, and you give them that, and then they take over. That was literally the line. And when they take over, then they impose their law. That's everything we taught our children not to think. And I said, well, Levi, what do you want to do? He said, people have to see these. And I said, well, I can do that, but are you sure at your workplace that you want to be involved in politics at this level? He said, this was a union page. He said, I don't feel like it's my union. And then he was booted off the page. Since then, there's been two other women that contacted me who have been thrown off of that, too, for challenging these statements that were far in excess of anything that needed to be said about the holidays. And that's where the state branch of ASHRAE came in and asked him to take those posts down because they were incendiary, mm-hmm. and they directly contradicted ASHRAE policy. I'm really proud that my son did it. I think the city responded really well. They had someone very high in the administration out on Levi's crew the next day to make sure that there was no retaliation. He was never physically threatened, but, you know, you just don't know. I mean, this is what we do in America. You know, he works in traffic out with cars and stuff, and all you got to do is be slow raising your flag up. We travel as much as we can, and, you know, we get out and we see the world. And when people speak English, they ask us about America. They ask us what's happening to us. Yeah, I think that we have to stop shouting at each other.
Dan Carpcombs, trustee of Perry Township, thanks for joining us on Big Talk.
Okay, thank you, Mike.
You can hear that episode and all episodes of Big Talk with Michael Glab at WFHB.org.
Support for WFHB comes from Monster Digital Marketing, offering digital marketing solutions for small businesses. Monster Digital Marketing websites are built for search engine optimization with both the desktop and the mobile device user in mind. Located at monsterdigitalmarketing.com or on the phone at 317-567-1197.
Support also comes from Growing Opportunities, a social business project of the South Central Community Action Program. Growing Opportunities is an urban hydroponic farm that provides job training opportunities for low-income people with barriers to employment, especially people with disabilities. They grow produce that is sold to local eateries, supermarkets, hospitals, and schools. Information available at 812-332-2168 or online at insccap.org.
Up next, we hear a report from correspondent Leah Carter, who spent last week in Standing Rock, North Dakota.
Everyone needs to move south of the bridge. You are criminally trespassing being on the bridge. You will be arrested for criminal trespass and munitions will be utilized to effect those arrests. Move to the south of the bridge to avoid this.
On the night of Sunday, November 20th, No Dapple peaceful protesters were subject to some of the strongest police brutality which the almost 10-month-long movement has seen. The 18-hour standoff between police and protesters, which lasted from 4 p.m. on Sunday until almost noon the next day, began when people decided to remove a three-week-old police barricade of Highway 1806, the road which runs next to the camps.
These are tactics that the U.S. military has been using against indigenous communities since first contact. And, you know, not just the U.S. cavalry, but even before, when this was not yet the United States. So these are tactics to, you know, exterminate people. And they continue the cultural genocide, the environmental genocide that's being perpetrated, all to protect the interests of big oil and corporate corporations that extract from the earth. We are beyond that kind of extraction economy, and we need to move into a more sustainable economy that supports all life.
Now, two lawsuits are being filed against the Morton County Police Department for excessive use of force, after they greeted peaceful protesters in full riot gear and shot rubber bullets, bean bags, tear gas canisters, and concussion grenades into the crowd, and used water cannons on people in sub-zero temperatures. Colorado attorney Angela Bibbins, who volunteers with the legal collective at Standing Rock, believes that their use of force was unlawful and put people's lives at risk.
And what I can tell you about rubber bullets is that they might not kill you. That doesn't mean that they aren't lethal. I think that's the thing that Morton County would like the world to believe, and certainly those police departments who have accumulated these kinds of militarized weapons would like that propaganda to be spread, but I can tell you from the injuries that have been perpetrated against water protectors that there's certainly a high risk of lethality, especially in conditions that what we saw on Sunday after people had been sprayed with water cannons in 23-degree temperatures. So people were already cold, exposed, wet, hypothermic, and then were battered with mace to the point where they lost bodily function, had vomited at the front lines. One person went into an epileptic seizure. One person, an elder, lost consciousness at the front lines, fortunately was revived by medics, but is still struggling. And the bean bags that, you know, they sound innocuous, they sound like a child's toy, but there's nothing childish or toy, you know, there's no toying around with them. They are like lead coated with plastic that can come at you at an alarming rate and cause some serious damage, not just soft tissue damage, but can really, you know, be a beating. And I don't understand why Morton County Sheriff's Department displayed such a blatant disregard for the sanctity.
As Angela and I spoke, we could hear one of the four unmarked surveillance planes circling very low to the ground and above the camp.
perspective, having slept in the legal tent and been in camp almost continuously for 3 months, that it's alarming the way that we are surveyed, that it's nonstop, that sometimes we get a break at night, but then it'll start up at 6 o'clock in the morning. I think it's really just to sort of create fear and chaos. And some people, like myself at this point, I'm kind of used to it. But, you know, that night, Sunday, there was a gray plane with no lights and no markings that flew over this camp for hours. Was it a DAPL plane? Was it law enforcement? I don't know. I know that there are folks, you know, smarter than me, who have more resources that are doing those investigations. But it's definitely a huge concern that there's so much surveillance going on.
Water protectors are subjected to a number of around-the-clock surveillance tactics. In addition to the unmarked airplanes, floodlights from the DAPL construction site and police surveillance sites keep the Ocheti Chacoan camp bright, even in the middle of the night. Police also use cell phone jamming and international mobile subscriber identity catchers, otherwise known as MC catchers, in order to obtain data from cell phones and eavesdrop on telephone calls. Tech activist and founder of the group Support the Revolution, Terrence Daniels, and the volunteer IT team at Standing Rock are working against these surveillance measures to create a secure connection at the camp.
Right, they're a one-trick pony. They've got violence and that's it. Right? We've got an entire, you know, all the minds of the world can come up with much better ideas than that. So we're trying to show that, you know, you can enter a market and, or, you know, look at a problem and start thinking of solutions and ways that we can work together to fix those solutions and not just carpet bombing each other. Kind of jamming and surveillance, you know, equipment that they could at this very moment. If you notice, they fly the planes over, they do, you know, it's not like they're hiding that they're doing surveillance of us. That's just one of the tools in 2016 that the police use. Like they use all of the other, they've got an MRAD sitting down there, they've got all sorts of toys and, you know, tools that they use.
These items include a long-range acoustic device, which is capable of causing permanent damage to someone's ears if they're within range.
About our government, like really, you're using items that are going to ruin everybody that's been exposed to that, right? It has permanent damage to their ears on unarmed American citizens. Like, that's not logical. That's not the way our country should.
Despite the surveillance tactics and threats of police violence and arrest, protesters and volunteers alike choose to stay and fight the pipeline.
We're going to put our lives down to try to prevent that. We're going to remain peaceful because with that, we are going to win. It's already done. It's not going to happen. Something's going to happen between now and then. A big miracle, something big. And things are happening now. There's a lot of shifts going on, and there's a lot of forces involved, and we're aware of those forces, but they're also on our side. We have the side of creation, so we're going to win. We know this. We take comfort in that, and that's why we stick around. We're not...
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Joe Crawford, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our features were produced by Michael Glab and Leah Carter.
Our engineers today are Chris Martin and Sean Albert. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, this is Ryan Stacey.
And I'm Carolyn Vandeweel. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered independent daily news program.
If you use iTunes, you can have this show delivered directly to you. Just go to the iTunes store, search for WFHB Daily Local News, and subscribe to our podcast.
And stay tuned for Blooming Out, Indiana's only LGBTQI public affairs show. It's coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.